We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
All right, I'm told we're off and running. A belated but happy hump day to you. And it is a hump day Wednesday, September 18 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Boy, if that is any indication. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D. This might be an interesting 2 hours, Clint.
Should I just rerun the intro again?
No, we're not not going to run that back. You can call us the Breeze. You can call us whatever the hell you want. I'm just glad to be back with you here. Heart just goes through your throat every time that happens when you're a broadcaster. But we're with you. And we got a lot of Saints to talk. A lot of LSU and Cajuns to talk as well. We'll be predicting some ball games, too, at half past this hour. I do want to lead off the latest on Drew Brees. Sean Payton, you heard it there during the two-minute drill. Optimistic about Drew Brees and his recovery. As he'll tell you in this next clip, they're not ready to put him on the IR. I think that there's an important caveat to that. You're not necessarily going to hear it in this clip, but I think it's one of those comma yet type of situations. So are you going to completely put him on ice for 8 weeks? You don't really have to make that decision maybe with the placement of the bye week. But here's Sean Payton on what they're not planning to do with Brees currently.
We'll look at that each week as we go. But right now, I don't think that's the plan.
Again, there are so many other considerations for this roster. I mean, not limited to the fact that Sheldon Rankin's still taking up a spot, not on IR, and yet you're not likely to have him for a number of game weeks moving forward into the future. One more quickie from Sean Payton, and then I'll get to some other things regarding LSU football. Going into this Sunday, this is one of Clint's favorite adages. If you have two quarterbacks, Clint says you have none. I'm not sure that's the case with these Saints. I think they have to use two. Payton will tell you that's exactly what we plan to do, staying on the West Coast and playing the Seattle Seahawks.
We'll approach this game with two quarterbacks, and we'll see where we're at with it. So, but we'll have the right plan relative to what those guys are going to be doing.
That Billy Napier talk is spreading far and wide. So Sean Payton hits us with a relative two, and there you have it. Brees won't play this Sunday. You knew that. Two quarterbacks will. He won't go on the IR for this week. Doesn't mean that he won't. Heading into the future. As it pertains to LSU football, Tigers 23.5 point favorites heading to Nashville to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. And is there overconfidence in this LSU team? I don't think so. Does that mean they'll cover the spread, that they're going to be dominating every single time out of the gate? I'm not sure that's the case either. We saw a little bit of kind of going through the motions, right? Laying in the weeds, first quarter against Northwestern State. I expect a little more urgency early against the Doors this week. I also know that they're without a lot of key players on defense. And when you're going to have to be without a couple of defensive linemen, an edge rusher, most likely, and Kalevon Chaisaw, Todd Harris out for the year, next man up. It has to be more than just a mantra, right? More than just something that you say you hang your hat on. This year's defense under Dave Aranda is going to have to prove that. And I think there's a chance that this needs to be Aranda's best coaching job since he stepped foot on campus in Baton Rouge. Why do I feel that way? In the preseason, I don't think any of us would have predicted that, right? An All-American returning in Grant Delpit, arguably the nation's best freshman injected into a starting CB role in Derek Stingley Jr. Kalevon Chaisaw is coming back. I think this might have to be Aranda's best job because I feel as if scheme is going to matter this year, maybe more than most or the rest of the time that he's been with the purple and gold. I think this time around, Aranda's going to have to mix and match more pieces. I think more freshmen are going to start to come to the forefront. You could look for more of Cordell Flott. We keep hearing about the young man from Alabama, the role he'll play as occasionally this team's third cornerback. In other situations, it'll be Kerry Vincent Jr., who's going to carry some of the water and have to do some things as a safety corner hybrid. And then there's Marcel Brooks. When we talk about freshmen, and the youngster from Texas, I think is poised to start to assume a bigger role as well. So what's it going to be for Aranda? On a given play, hey, it could be five DBs. It could be seven DBs. He's going to have to find a way, I think, to scheme LSU and use some of that incredible speed on all three levels to his advantage to overcome what is clearly going to be injuries that you hope don't last through the month of October. But I'm not sure that you can really guard against that and guarantee it. It's football. I know you can't guarantee it. Harris, as we mentioned at safety, already out for the year. Some of these other cats, you kind of wonder with Chase on, just how precautionary are they being? How much lingering effects from last year's injury is the young man from Texas still experiencing? And then up front, hey, we've already seen. Rashard Lawrence has had to sit and watch for a little bit. Apu Aika not giving the depth at the nose tackle position that anybody would have hoped for at this point. All of that due to injury. And it doesn't matter, frankly, if it's reactionary, precautionary, how is everybody going to be? How are they going to perform? And are they going to have some continuity with one another when Florida and Auburn come to town? And all that, of course, before the big test against Alabama in Bryant-Denny Stadium. So as we lead off the show today, little of this, little of that. With LSU, it's all about getting right, getting healthy, and having the defense start to play catch up with the offense. What a time to follow LSU football. It's absolutely a reversal of fortunes. But is it as hopeless on defense this year as it has felt for so many years on offense for the Bayou Bengals? The answer there is no. The talent's too great. Sure, some of it's young, and sure, a lot of it hasn't performed together, but they've got another opportunity to take a step forward and build the bench a little bit, so to speak, at least this Saturday against Vandy. As for the Saints, we'll get more into Who Dat Nation later in the program. I think there are some players that have to step up outside of the quarterback position. I think Alvin Kamara, Latavius Murray might be toward the top of that list. But it's interesting. That S word that I used earlier for LSU's defense, scheme, awfully important for Sean Payton and that Saints offense. How can they scheme maybe around the quarterback position and make the running game relevant again? We'll get into that later in the program. On the other side of this break, been cooking this one up all day. Shay Dixon hopped aboard the program yesterday while I was out at Pete's on Johnston. He wanted to talk Joe Burrow and maybe where he's starting to fit in historically at the LSU quarterback position. Hardly could sleep last night thinking about that question. All right, not really, but it's a damn good one from Shay. I'm going to repurpose it as we sink or swim on the other side of this break. At 4:30, Cousin Dino hops aboard. He and I, both 500 or better last week with Spreadheads, we'll put it on the line again in about 20 minutes. At 5:05, Sam Spiegelman, Rivals.com, talking LSU recruiting and the ongoing evolving recruiting battle between Ed Ogeron, Jimbo Fisher, and Tom Herman. And then at 5:30, a man who covers LSU but attended Vanderbilt. He's pretty useful this week. Brian Lazar at 5:30. Big show today, and we'll dump you into the capable voices and hands of Don Allen and Company, Five Guys, Stories, and Lies on the other side of our program starting at 6 o'clock. So stick with us. Plenty more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right at you on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Can you hear me now? Okay, I don't know if I'm the Verizon guy or the Sprint guy. That cat just keeps changing colors. But we're plugged in, we're ready to roll, and we've got a doozy of a question for you. At least we think so. So before we welcome on Cousin Dino, it's time for our sink or swim question of the day. Music, please.
Love, exciting and new.
Not so much of a question today as an assignment. but I think it's one you'll enjoy. Rank your top three LSU quarterbacks since 2000. That's it. Give me your top three. You've got a number of guys to choose from. It's all going back to what Shea Dixon and a seed that Shea planted in my head yesterday. When he started talking about Burrow's historical place in LSU QB history and just how bizarre that really feels with the limited time he's spent manning the position. But when you kind of chop it down into the context of maybe the LSU golden era until now, which I'm not sure that we're still in it, but maybe it's being resurrected. Give me your top three. Call us up, 706-0111. Clint, I'm willing to guarantee you and I don't see eye to eye on this one.
And you are absolutely correct. I think I'm going to start off 3-1. And number three, I think we all are going to have Jamarcus Russell in this list, because how can you not have a guy like that? He was definitely a phenomenal player in college, not so much in the NFL ranks, but the dude was absolutely phenomenal all the way around at LSU. I've got him at number three, and I'll break that down in just a little bit. Number two, it's got to be Zach Mettenberger. I have seen a lot of great quarterbacks. I feel like he was as solid as they come, both in kind of what we saw at him at LSU, especially the last couple of years of his tenure over there. And then we wrap things up.
So who in the world do you have at one?
Joe freaking Burrow.
Wow.
I have, let's be honest, Ben, have we ever seen a quarterback throw for 300, 400 yards in the first three games like he has, especially against a program like Texas? I feel like that's a tough bar to kind of jump over when you just look around at everybody else. Yes, the offense, it's very much different compared to what the offenses were. Like we've talked about it, Jamarcus Russell, Mettenberger, very different offenses, but I feel like Joe Burrow is going to be head and shoulders above the rest. Might be recency bias, but I'm just going to call it like I see it.
Yeah, it's almost like you didn't live before the year 2012. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go 1, 2, then 3. Give me Jamarcus Russell at the top. And it's like so many of the people who are short-sighted when they talk about Jimbo Fisher, the quarterback developer. Oh, well, look at the pro that Jameis turned into. How about Christian Ponder? They were first-round picks. What they did in college got them drafted where they were. There is a reason that Jamarcus Russell was the first overall pick in the draft. He flicked it as effortlessly as anybody who's ever played the position at LSU. And while I talk a lot about the 2011 team being the best I've ever seen to wear the purple and gold, if I really had to drill down and give you the second best, it ain't 07 for damn sure. It might be 03, but it could just as easily be 2006. And when you combine all the receiving and rushing talent, the defensive excellence, 06 was an incredible squad for LSU. And that was the year where Jamarcus Russell earned his money, quite literally. And so I got to go Jamarcus at number one overall since the year 2000. Give me Rohan Davey at number two. And that's the part where young Clint just doesn't have some of the age-old wisdom as a guy that's like 3.5 years older than him. You know, me. Rohan Davey helped to get LSU to the brink of winning the 01 SEC title. And eventually, we're able to go get that with Matt Mauk. But he came back, did Rohan, and had one of the most memorable performances LSU QB's ever had in a Sugar Bowl win, waxing Illinois on a night that it snowed in South Louisiana. Rohan Davey, I would argue, had to carry more of a load than some of these LSU quarterbacks of very, very recent vintage, because I don't think the defenses were quite then what they are now. And what Rohan and company did after starting that 2001 season off in a hole, three losses fairly early, they come back and win the Auburn game that was displaced at the end of the season. Rohan was a very, very good LSU quarterback. I would put Joe Burrow at three right now. I'm putting him ahead of Mettenberger and the two Matts that you conveniently forgot as well, the ones that won Natty Ships, Flynn and Mauk. So respect to all those guys that are on the list, but I'm going Russell, Davey, who didn't make your list, and Joe Burrow. Let's go get your answers. Out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Brandon, you've heard two amateur lists. Give me your pro list.
Three would be Russell, two would be Flynn, and number one's going to be Burrow.
I just don't know how y'all could do that already. Give me a little bit on why you've already determined that.
I mean, look at it. We finally found an offense that suits him. I mean, he's going to break He's going to break Rohan's record. DeMarcus Russell speaks for himself. Number one pick. Wasted his talent in the NFL, drinking on the purple drink. But, I mean, Matt Flynn, he was an awesome guy, awesome quarterback, stuck around 5 years. So
I respect the Flynn pick, I do.
Those three. And my list came from 2003 because I thought that's what y'all had set up front. That's why
no Rohan. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You went from the championships forward, and it's a good list. Thank you, Brandon.
Nice.
And he fit in a purple drink reference, so ding, ding, ding. Bonus points there. Let's get more. 706-0111. Rank your top three LSU QBs since Y2K. I think it's not even close. If you're going to put one of the Mats on this list, it's got to be Flynn over Mock. One was a little bit more of a game manager. But you know what's interesting? When you really consider two of the most prolific performances that Matt Flynn had in that two-loss 2007 season, they both came in high-scoring triple overtime games. And both of those games were losses. Not saying you can or should put all that on the quarterback. I mean, McFadden and company ran hog wild on LSU in the triple OT loss Thanksgiving weekend in Baton Rouge. Over in Kentucky, Andre Woodson and company diced up LSU's defense. So I respect the pick of Flynn, but I'm just going to go with Davey because so many of his big performances landed in dramatic LSU wins. DeMarcus Russell, I think we agree. Brandon speaks for himself. Burrow for me is at three, but I allow for the fact, and maybe this is an important statement, I allow for the fact that in 2.5 months, I may feel like Burbank Joe belongs at number one. Let's take another opinion. Back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. John, give us your list.
Listen, man, I don't think you can put Burrow in there at all just yet. Not to say he hasn't accomplished a lot of great things, but 3-2-1 would be Flynn, Mettenberger, and then Russell. And as much as I think Rohan Davies, fantastic, yay, yee-haw, not necessarily somebody that I'd put in the top just because most people don't even know who he is. And that's not just about this decade or last decade. It's just about life in general and good football, and we all know football from today. So, but Joe Burrow hasn't done enough. He's played three freaking games good this year, and I'd like to see him play all of them that well, and then we can crown him. But, I'd like to see a championship or actually meet expectations for once in our lovely football program before we ever start crowning people.
That's pretty fair. Thanks for the call, John. And I could dig it. Let's take more. 706-0111, your reaction to these lists. You can give us your own personal compilation, 1, 2, and 3. And so basically, I think there's an understanding that DeMarcus Russell has to be on your top three. I don't see how you have him any lower than two. I think it's inexcusable, frankly. But there's maybe some differences of opinion when it comes to Matt Flynn versus Zach Mettenberger. And sometimes I think we forget, and I'll give some credit to the Metsiah here, who wasn't on my top three in all fairness. I made the statement earlier that I thought Rohan Davey had to carry the team without defenses that were maybe as spectacular as some that have come since. Mettenberger's best season came when John Chavis had arguably his worst defense. LSU in 2013, the year of the 2,000-yard receivers, OBJ, Jarvis, 1,000-yard rusher, Jeremy Hill, LSU's defense in 2013 was not what we've become accustomed to, by and large. And so Mettenberger, when he was at his best, was playing Atlas and had to carry this team. And when it wasn't happening, as it wasn't at Ole Miss that year, he's throwing picks and it goes poorly, LSU didn't really have a chance. And so I respect a lot of what I'm hearing so far. I just can't respect DeMarcus anywhere lower than number two on a list. But let's take one more, then we'll hit a break. Back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dwayne, the final answer of this segment is yours.
Ben, I'm with you on Rohan Davey. I'll have him number one. He had his best receivers came over there as a running back. And ended up being got the big award. What's his name?
Josh Reed and the Biletnikoff Award.
The Biletnikoff Award was a running back on LSU. And that's the kind of weapons he had. That's why I like Rohan Dave at number one. I got Russell at number two. And I got Matt Flynn at number three.
That's a solid list. Dwayne, thanks for the shout-out.
All right, Ben, have a good day.
You too. And that's a man who knows his history there when it comes to Rain High Wolves making the journey east to Baton Rouge. Josh Reed, Biletnikoff Award winner. Certainly the quarterback didn't hurt his cause there. And I think Alabama in Tuscaloosa that day is still trying to figure out how to cover Josh Reed. Didn't he have like 20 catches? Something just absolutely out of this world. Yeah, Rohan Davey needs to be considered. But a lot of cases have been made for Matt Flynn. Cases to be made even for Zach Mettenberger. Joe Burrow, I think, can creep into the back end of that top three right now. But John, he gave us a little bit of the old school Denny Green. Don't cry on his ass just yet. Let's see what happens during this highly anticipated season. Good answer so far. We'll catch more at the end of this hour. But on the other side of this break, Cousin Dino and Spreadheads, stick with us. You'll get your betting lines and you'll get some picks certain to go wrong. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
What in the hell is Spreadheads? Oh, a segment for degenerate gamblers. All right, well, then it is time for Spreadheads with Cousin Dino.
And it's time for a segment of guys who didn't go sub-500 last week. I don't know if that gets you excited, but it's a matter of fact. Welcome back, Cousin Dino. How the heck are you today?
Man, I'm doing awesome. A little nip in the air here, and don't have any garbage lines. I think we got some real lines to discuss this week. So I'm fired up. Got some goosebumps.
Yeah, last week certainly needed some sanitation workers. Those were bad games. Nonetheless, I went 6-4. That means 3-2 on each level, college and pro. Dino, you were 5-5. You had your better day, 3-2 on college football. We'll both step up our games. Let's start with college. Number 11, Michigan, at number 13, Wisconsin. Badgers, Dino, 3.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Wisconsin here. Camp Randall Stadium, that's one of the toughest places to go and play. And to be honest, I'm not buying Michigan as a program. I'm not buying Jim Harbaugh as a head coach. And I think Wisconsin is undervalued. Year after year, they continually do what they do. They've got this big offensive line again. They've got a great running back in Jonathan Taylor, who went for 2,200 yards last year, and he's back at it again this year. I think Wisconsin takes care of business and proves that they're the better team, probably the better program. So give me Wisconsin to cover that 3.5.
Dino, it's really simple for me. I don't bet on Michigan in big games, and I certainly don't bet on Michigan in big games on the road. I completely agree with you here. I got Wisconsin. The 3.5 doesn't bother me. I might even take some juice and move that up to 4.5, 5.5. I don't know about 6, 6.5. I like Wisconsin here. I think they prove a little bit of a point that after Ohio State, it's more like Wisconsin and probably Penn State than it is a direct line to Michigan. So we agree off the bat. Let's take it to a game that used to mean a lot in the SEC. Tennessee at Florida. Gators, they're the number 9 team in the country, and they are 14-point favorites. I'm going to take Florida, and that's not exactly a huge vote of confidence in their backup quarterback, although he looked pretty good. I think coming in for Felipe Franks, the Trask kid, led him to an emergency win at Kentucky. This is more about, I don't care where they're playing, I'm not betting on Tennessee right now in any way, shape, or form. So give me the Gators to cover 2 touchdowns.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to take the Vols plus the 14. Listen, I think the Vols stink. But I think Florida, are they really the number 9 team in the nation? I don't think they are. As you said, they're playing with their backup QB. And I think Tennessee's QB is probably actually a better option than Florida's QB at this point. I know Florida's had their number, but I just think that's way too much. Tennessee's already been embarrassed badly once, maybe 1.5 times this year. I think Pruitt and the Vols are going to be ready to go. So give me the Vols plus the 14 here.
That's a short memory. They've been embarrassed twice, right? First it was a team from the Sun Belt. Then it was the Stormin' Mormons that came in. Yeah,
I said 1.5.
They've been embarrassed 1.5 times. I like that. All right, let's go to the home state team. Number 4, LSU, on the road at Vandy. That line is 23.5. Who you got?
Yeah, I got Vandy. LSU's going to win this game, and they're going to win this game in dominant fashion. Don't get me wrong. I want you to tell me, when is the last time LSU traveled to Nashville? Because I honestly, I can't remember. But I think it's going to be a backdoor cover. The reason I say that is LSU has bigger goals. They're going to get up big, but then they're going to want to sit some players, and that's when I think Vandy anchors down, and they come in with a late touchdown, and 24 is a lot of points. So I think Vandy gets a backdoor cover. I think LSU wins comfortably, but they just don't have intentions. It doesn't matter to them. They got bigger goals this year.
Dino, I know I covered a ball game in Nashville between these two in 2010. I don't think that LSU's going back to Music City since, except for bowl games. I agree with you here. And, yeah, the doors are 0-2. All right, they lost by 24 points to Georgia, and they lost by 18 points last week at Purdue. We've established they're not an upper echelon SEC team. LSU, we believe, is. We know LSU's offense is for real. Problem is, LSU's defense, right now, they're injured, and almost at all three levels, Dino. And so I like Vanderbilt's chances of keeping it within basically 3.5 touchdowns. So we agree on this one. Let's keep it within the SEC. Number 8, Auburn, at number 17, A&M. Aggies are 3.5-point favorites. I don't know about you, Dino, but to me something smells here. Because based on the rankings, hey, Auburn should be favored. I think some people understand that the A&M loss to Clemson is somewhat excusable. I also am not looking forward to riding a rookie QB on the road for Auburn. So I'm going to take A&M to cover the 3.5 because they're at home, because they've got a QB with a little bit more seasoning. I don't feel great about this one, but I'm going to lean toward the Aggies.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to take Auburn plus the points here. And the reason I'm going to take them is I think Vegas sees this as a toss-up. So if it's a toss-up, I'm going to take the team that's getting points. And I think Gus Malzahn has adjusted his coaching style. He knows he has the freshman QB, and he's running the ball more. He's making sure his QB doesn't turn the ball over. I see this being a slop, not sloppy, but a low-scoring game. So give me Auburn. Actually, I would not be surprised if Auburn goes out to College Station and pulls off a small upset.
Let's finish up with Notre Dame at number 3, Georgia. Bulldogs are 14 points. That's a lot, Dino. Are you going to take the bait?
Yeah, 14 points. I thought this was number 7 versus number 3. Something stinks here, so I'm interested to see your take. But I'm going to take the Bulldogs because I think it stinks so much. I don't know if Notre Dame knows what they're walking into. I'll put it this way. They had to put in extra seats in Sanford Stadium at UGA for this game. They're expecting 100,000 people outside of the stadium. The Hampton Inn in Athens is going for $700. People in Atlanta and Athens are losing their mind. Notre Dame is walking into a damn firestorm. I think Georgia has about 30, 40 pounds on both lines of scrimmage. They're just bigger, they're stronger, they're more physical. It's going to be an electric atmosphere. I might be a fool, but I'm going to take UGA to cover the 14.
Welcome back to Spreadheads. We disagree now 3 times in a row. I'm going to take Notre Dame, and you know it pains me to pick Notre Dame to do anything of significance. But here I'm just telling you, I think they could keep it within 2 touchdowns. The last time that Georgia performed a blackout, Dino, in Sanford Stadium went very poorly. You remember that, correct?
They go on blackout? I didn't know that.
I believe I've heard a blackout is in order, and the last time that happened, Alabama got to remind Georgia they wore black to their own funeral. You say they're running into a firestorm and a buzzsaw. I'm just not so sure. I like Georgia to win this game. That's a bigger spread than I'm comfortable allowing. So I'm going to go against what my rooting interest would tell me here. I'm going to try to use my rational brain. I'm sure it'll bite me in the butt. But I think Notre Dame could keep it within 2 touchdowns. Quickly, let's scamper over to the NFL. Lead us off with Thursday Night Football. This one ought to be ugly. Tennessee at Jacksonville. Titans, 1.5-point favorites on the road.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Titans. I think you've seen what the Jags are. A complete mess. They got players trying to fight their head coach. They got the mustache Gardner Minshew playing quarterback at this point, the backup. I believe in the Titans a little bit. I know you were high on the Titans, so I think the Titans can get this done and cover the small line. It's not exactly like the Jags have a big home field advantage.
The Jags were one of my preseason picks to really win a lot more games than last season. An opportunity perhaps to even get to the AFC title game. Boy, not anymore. And this one might be as simple as Mariota, greater than sign, Minshew. I like Tennessee as well on the road. We're going to keep it in the AFC, Dino. Baltimore at Kansas City. The Chiefs are a 6.5-point favorites. Give me Baltimore here. This is more of a vote of confidence, Dino, in the Ravens defense. I'm not telling you that Lamar Jackson will keep up his pace. Tight end Mark Andrews has been fantastic. Former Saint Mark Ingram looks good in the backfield. You add all those things in, and they're helpful. But I'm voting on Baltimore's defense. And I think Harbaugh's got a group this year that can keep them afloat on that side of the football.
I disagree. I don't want to take Kansas City here. I know 6.5 is a big line against a 2-0 team, but they beat two crappy teams. Baltimore has beat up on garbage. This is Kansas City's home opener. Arrowhead Stadium is, in my opinion, the hardest place to go in and play. Patty Mahomes is just doing what he does. They're the only team in the AFC that can challenge the Patriots. So give me Kansas City to cover 6.5 at home.
Atlanta at Indy. Colts 1.5-point favorites at home. Who you leaning toward?
Yeah, I'm going Atlanta here. I'm probably going to take some heat for this, but that win against Philadelphia last week kind of electrified the city. It was a big win over Philadelphia. Kind of got a monkey off their back. They had lost 3 straight against Philadelphia. Their defense, they're more physical. Their defense, Deion Jones. Everybody around there knows Deion Jones. Keanu Neal. Even Vic Beasley showed up. So Atlanta seems to have a little juice. I don't like to cheer for injuries, but knowing that Drew Brees is out, I feel like they think they are the front runners in the NFC South. So I'm going to take Atlanta.
So let me get this straight. There's a juice and a buzz around Georgia, so you're picking them. Atlanta, so you're picking them. Is there like a Marietta High School game you feel strongly about as well?
Marietta's got some good players. Eric Gilbert, watch out for him. 5
Homer
stars.
Radio, yeah. Brother. Homer Radio. I'm taking Atlanta as well, but it has nothing to do with juice. I'm just not voting with confidence on Jacoby Brissett. Quickly, we're going to go to the Saints at the Seahawks. Home of the 12th man, and the Seahawks 4.5-point favorites. I'm going to take that line. I think that the Saints still getting reacclimated to life after Drew Brees. I like the Seahawks to cover the 4.5. I hate to say that. This isn't the start to the Saints season anybody wanted, but it's hard for me to say yes. The Saints, with Teddy Bridgewater, are going into Seattle, and they're going to take care of business. I just don't have that kind of confidence right now.
Disagree. I'm on the Saints. I know Teddy Bridgewater didn't look great, but he's got a full week to prepare. Don't sleep on Taysom Hill. I don't think Seattle's that great. They haven't beat anybody. And I think the Saints, they were Super Bowl contenders, and they are Super Bowl contenders. They're going to weather the storm. They're going to be back. So give me the Saints to cover 4.5.
Let's end it with Sunday Night Football. Rams at the Browns. I don't really understand this line. L.A., only 3-point favorites. That line is low. I'm just not a believer yet in Cleveland. Congrats on winning the game against the Jets. This is a different level. I think that Baker Mayfield's going to have pressure in his face all night long. I got the Rams to cover the 3.
I got the Rams as well. Cousin Dino's papa, big papa, is a big Browns fan. Nothing personal. It's just business. Rams are going to go in there and tear it up. I agree with you. The Browns are overhyped. The Rams are who they are. They're legit. So, this is a no-brainer here in my thoughts. But if we're both thinking this, then maybe everybody should bet the other thing.
Yeah,
but
sprint the other way here. We agree twice on the college side, both with home teams. We like Wisconsin. We like Vanderbilt. On the pro side, we agree 3 times. On the road, we like the Titans. We like the Falcons and the Rams. Dino, best of luck this week. Time to roll the dice. Take a chance.
All right, brother.
All right, we got to hit our final break of the hour. When we return, let's get to a little on the Raging Cajuns. I want you to hear from the Ohio Bobcats head coach. Big road trip this week for UL. We'll learn you a little more when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back at it on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Always entertaining. I think that's the word for it. When Cousin Dino could join us on a hump day, we'll get your reaction to that, and you can throw a couple more logs in the fire when it comes to our sink or swim question of the day. Rank your top 3 LSU quarterbacks since the year 2000. We've gotten some very entertaining responses on Facebook. I'll share those with you more in our 5 o'clock hour. But I did promise you we'd look forward to what I think has a chance to be the most competitive ball game between the three programs, franchises that we frequent on this show. LSU at Vandy, 3.5 touchdown spread. Shouldn't be terribly competitive whether LSU covers or not. Different story. The Saints, 4.5 point dogs at Seattle. But I'm kind of locked in to the Cajuns at Ohio because a win over the Bobcats and suddenly a 3-1 UL team has a chance to maybe get one more at Statesboro before a bye week. If UL is 4-1, look out. A lot of things become possible this season. Maybe even tying. I don't know about surpassing, but tying the win total that all those Mark Hudspeth teams had for years. And so I think this is a very big one. And I want to make sure to get you kind of the other side of the aisle. Frank Solich from the Ohio Bobcats, sounding off on the Raging Cajuns, gave you a bit of an overall look at what he thinks of this UL team that's heading up north.
Their quarterback is a big part of that. You know, he's a guy that's an excellent runner as well as thrower. He's got a strong arm. You know, he's not very tall, about 5'10", they say. But there's been some Heisman Trophy winners that probably aren't any taller than are playing pro ball right now. He's got the ability to make the big play both in the air and on the ground. And they've got really good running backs, and they can keep subbing them in. They got an experienced offensive line, and they got a big offensive line. I mean, those guys up front are huge, and, you know, they'll try to wear you down.
Former Nebraska head coach Frank Solich still leading that Ohio Bobcats program and giving you his side of previewing UL versus Ohio this Saturday in Athens, Ohio. In this cut, he tells you he does not consider the Cajuns, despite that rotating room of running backs, he does not consider the UL offense to be one-dimensional.
I don't see them as being one-dimensional, but obviously if we can't stop the run, that'll be a tough deal for us. But I think the same is true for them. You know, if our running game gets going the way it's capable of getting going, and we've shown flashes of that at times this season, I think you'll find that it'll be two teams that have the ability to run, and going to be playing hard to keep the other team from taking control of the game that way. But we'll see.
Should be a fun one, right? The Fun Belt travels north to take on the MAC. And when you consider their offense, the Bobcats are led by Nathan Rourke, who recently set the program record for most touchdowns in Bobcat history. Solich here gives you the drop on his signal caller.
I've not congratulated him on that yet. You know, we give him Sunday completely off, so we don't see him on Sunday. And so today when he comes in, certainly we'll congratulate him. He had a great ball game, and he's got more football to play yet, and so accomplishing that record as he did at this point in time in his last season is remarkable.
Let's take one more from Solich, getting ready for the UL Ohio game on Saturday. This Bobcats team comes in at 1-2. They lost at Power 5 Pitt. They lost a tough one at Marshall. Here is Solich's reaction from the first three games, in which he says, we still have taken away a lot from the positive side of the ledger.
You know, you look at the positives, and there are a lot of positives from these games, first three games. You look at some of the things that we need to do better, and you address that with them, and you know they're anxious to get those things corrected and move on. So the spirit of this football team will not be broken. I do know that. And so... It's going to be a lot of fun to coach this team, and it already has been, but it'll continue to be, and they'll give you everything they got, and they got quite a bit, so we'll just see how it plays out.
CD, I've been wrong before, and I will be wrong again, but I have a gut feeling that this is a one-score game for whoever wins it.
Oh, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's going to be a one-score game hotly contested between these two programs. Is again, you've brought it up all throughout the preseason. I'm not doubting that Ohio's a good program, but at the same time, the level of competition they've played against with Pitt and with Marshall, they didn't necessarily look that great in those performances, but again, a lot of positives. I think Nathan Rourke is going to be the absolute key for this defense to kind of key in on, and we've seen them be able to bring the pressure to a quarterback. Andre Jones has kind of come out of nowhere to become a guy that I feel like is going to be out of depth towards the defensive line.
I think neither team holds the other below 24, 27 points. I just don't think Ohio can stop the Cajuns' run game and then vice versa with the Bobcats' passing game. I don't think Ron Roberts' defense is there just yet, taking the show on the road and just squeezing the life out of a potent offense in their own building. The other thing I believe is this. The Cajuns' test against Mississippi State was greater than Ohio's test against Pitt. You agree with that?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think you just look at everything that Mississippi State had this year.
That being said, what that team has experienced in its other games is greater than coming home to get fat on Liberty and basically the band and drum line from Texas Southern, which was the best part of their team. So for me, one of them has been a little more tested lately, but the Cajuns are also pretty healthy. And coming home, being able to play some other guys, they've got fresh legs as well. I think this is an incredibly compelling matchup. We'll continue to preview it as the week goes on, and I do promise we're going to get your Facebook responses to our sink or swim question on the air in the 5 o'clock hour. We've got a lot of them. Top three quarterbacks that LSU's had since 2000. The rankings, I mean, they vary wildly. I'm excited to share that with you on the other side of our hour break. But let's finish up this hour with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Eye-popping. I heard a stat about the Astros' Yordan Alvarez today that is mind-blowing, eye-popping, all of the above. He has not had a swinging miss in his last 15 at-bats. Not like a strikeout, not like a strike three swing and miss. Hasn't swung and missed at a pitch in his last 15 at-bats. The kid is remarkable. Give him the AL Rookie of the Year. That stat is eye-popping. It's also the final word of this hour brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back with Sam Spiegelman. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next hour, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. And within about 90 seconds, you will have Sam Spiegelman talking all kinds of cruton. Not just LSU, but the latest from the states of Texas, Louisiana, and an ongoing and evolving battle between Tom Herman, Jimbo Fisher, and Ed Ogeron. But a couple of quick notes before we bring Sam out. The story continues to just be wildly entertaining. Nick Saban, set to enter the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame yesterday, he gave the soundbite that the one professional regret he has is ever leaving LSU. How about a follow-up? Quote, according to Glenn Gilbo, the Daily Advertiser, Nick Saban, quote, "I'm just amazed this has happened. I never thought Louisiana would do this for me," end quote. I'll continue to let you chew on that. My guy Shay Dixon, I hit him originally live on air with the line yesterday that Saban originally gave. He texted me today and he said, "I'm not sure that's set in for me yet. Some of this stuff is going to take a while." Staying on the college football side, another interesting tidbit. Wednesday, October the 2nd, HBO is going to air kind of a Hard Knocks style feature on the Florida Gators program. The odd part, it's going to be about the Gators preparing for their Week 4 game against Towson. Boo on the opponent, but for me, cheers to the idea. Asked about it earlier today, Dan Mullen, head coach of Florida, said, "We are excited to have this opportunity to be the first college football program to be showcased on HBO's 24/7 franchise. I am a big fan of Hard Knocks, and I look forward to working with some of the best in the business," end quote. I like picking a college team. I like sticking with them for a week. But couldn't we catch Florida preparing for Miami in the week zero game? Maybe something a little bit sexier than Florida Towson? I don't know. I'm just thinking aloud. But alas, we will get kind of a hard knocks on a college program. Right about now, though, let's flip it up. And it's time that we talk a little recruiting. It is time to welcome back aboard Sam Spiegelman, Texas and Louisiana recruiting analyst for Rivals and Yahoo Sports. Sam, happy hump day to you, my man. How are you today?
Staying alive, Ben. Just staying alive.
You're not just living. You are thriving, and you know it. Let's start in the Lone Star State. There was a huge battle, as you know, between LSU and Texas. The folks here will want to know, well, what did some of those Texas recruits think about the way LSU played out there? I'll get your reaction and maybe what you thought about that huge ball game in Austin.
Yeah, I think the cool part was, you know, I just happened to catch a game in Lake Travis that Friday night, so I stayed in Austin for the weekend. But it was cool, you know, being in Baton Rouge so much to finally get a taste of you know, an away stadium and away feel for the marquee game of the month, I would say. I mean, Texas versus LSU, and obviously what me and you talk about all the time is they share a recruiting territory. And what was cool was, you know, obviously the week leading up, the week after, talking to kids that are either committed to Texas, committed to LSU, or being recruited by both, or maybe youngsters, you know, the sophomores and juniors that are considering both. It was really split. I think the coolest thing was kind of Texas taking some of the LSU love and LSU taking some of the Texas love. And what I mean by that is, you know, Texas, you think about the spread offense in the Big 12 and high-octane, you know, passing game. Well, that's what they were talking about with LSU after the game. And then the Texas side of things, you know, those kids talking about, wow, you know, our front, the offensive line played really well. The defense played great. It was kind of, you know, Texas is not this, you know, stereotypical Big 12 team that scores a lot of points and can't play defense. And LSU is in this SEC team that, you know, runs, you know, halfback trap over and over again and just loads up the box and plays good defense. So it makes for a better recruiting battle. It makes things more interesting. We're finally out of that mold where we don't have to talk about, do you really believe in the LSU offense changing? That stereotype is nicked. And then for Texas, you know, dispelling the myth of the Big 12 is soft and can't play defense, because they were tough, and their offensive line did absolutely fantastic against LSU's front seven. One of the best performances against Kalavon Chaisson I've ever seen. And obviously Kalavon is from Texas, so a lot of eyes on that battle, and that was probably the coolest thing for me.
You've got a report that's up at Rivals.com, a fun three-week stretch in Texas to kick off the season. As you look at your, I guess, stock report, as you call it, from the road, anything involving kids that might be tied to LSU, whether it's the class of 2020 or maybe even the junior crop of 2021?
Yeah, for the LSU's purposes, you know, they always have an inroads in Texas. I think outside of New Orleans, their biggest alumni base is in Houston, and you know, talking to coaches in the Beaumont area, which is, you know, obviously where a current player like Kerry Vincent is from, they admire Kerry. It's actually pretty interesting just because I covered Kerry's recruitment so intensely to kind of return back there for the first time in about 3 years and gauge their reaction. And there's a stretch between Beaumont Westbrook High School and Port Arthur Memorial, obviously Kerry's alma mater, where they call it Texas Louisiana. And I mean, it feels like Louisiana. It feels like you're right outside of Lafayette. I mean, it same sense, telling me where to go get po' boys after a practice. And LSU, so I stopped to see Bryce Anderson from Beaumont Westbrook, one of the top DBs nationally in 2022. And on Wednesday, he's talking to me about going up to LSU and then maybe going to Texas for the LSU game. And he's kind of just, you know, talking recruiting. And he's going to a lot of LSU games over the season. He committed to LSU that Sunday. You know, it's very early, and we won't really begin finishing evaluations for 2022 until next spring. But watching Bryce in practice, he's already a super sophomore, as I like to call him. He's a 6-foot, 180-pound sophomore playing corner, safety, a little bit of quarterback for his team. He's LSU's first commitment in a 2022 class, and he's going to have a lot of teammates and people in the area. He's going to begin recruiting for Coach O. And then I got to catch up with 2021's first commitment for LSU, out of Hutto, the same alma mater as a guy like Jeremy Curley. big defensive end that's going to event that shed some weight. He's going to play outside linebacker for LSU. He's another guy recruiting for LSU. You know, obviously a lot, you know, with Jimbo Fisher at A&M and Tom Herman at Texas, it's made life a little bit more difficult for LSU to swoop in, but they're always going to get their guys, especially guys like Bryce and Landon Watson, you know, who they identify as guys they want to be a part of their class early on, and that's just a little bit of a smidge to help them recruit the state, you know, from Baton Rouge.
Talking with Sam Spiegelman, Rivals.com, and, of course, the Yahoo Sports Network. As you look back into Louisiana, I think you and I have talked since the commitment of Coy Moore from Rummel, but some of the other dominoes that you expect to fall, big names in Louisiana, whether it's LSU or not, who are you keeping an eye on?
Yeah, the biggest domino that's not going to fall until the early signing period is Jacoby Aguilary. He's just outside the top 100 nationally for Rivals. And he was going back and forth between LSU and Alabama. He mentioned Georgia and Texas and Texas A&M, but those visits have never transpired. He's continued to visit LSU, whether it's for camps, official visits, and I think he was at the game last weekend. It'll be interesting to see, because obviously it's only the middle of September, if Alabama is able to get him back on campus. He already took his OV there in the summertime, and he also camped there in the beginning of June. That's an LSU-Alabama battle all the way to the end, but he has, for a long period of time, been a priority for Coach O, and they're putting together a stellar defensive line class, headlined by Jaquelin Roy. Also, Jalen Lee from Live Oak is also a top 250 guy for us on Rivals. If they can get a finishing piece like Guillory, that's something I'm watching, but Alabama's not going to go down easy there. Ashad Clayton is someone I'm keeping an eye on. You know, he had been flirting with LSU for so long, and I think he's just starting to kind of open things back up. He's coming off a pretty serious injury, but he's been playing the first couple weeks of the season. He's going to be playing Carr over the weekend, and I'll be at that Easton Carr showdown. Very interested to see how he bounces back from the injury. But schools like Georgia and Alabama, A&M have been kicking the tires with him. LSU is still in search of that running back for the 2020 class, so it'll be interesting to see if he's off to a good start his senior year, if that kind of reopens the door for him to stay home in Baton Rouge. And then for LSU's purposes, you know, because, you know, they need another defensive tackle, they need a running back. The big thing they need is offensive line. I'm not sure how many are left in Louisiana, but I know they're kicking the tires on a couple of committed guys in Texas, like Tykes Crawford. You know, one of the top uncommitted in the country is Garrett Hayes from Athens, Texas, out there in East Texas. He said he's heard from Coach O and Coach Craig and Tommy Robinson. Not sure that they're going to have enough time to kind of gain ground on Hayes, but those are the two in Louisiana, and then obviously you throw in the offensive line purposes for LSU's pursuit. The cool thing that I kind of mentioned in a separate story for Rivals today is seniors, for the most part, are committed by now. You know, there are a few exceptions, but it's expedited this timeline from, you know, by October, November being committed and December being the first signing period. I expect like 20 or less people to be signing in February, barring a specific reason. I think we're inching slowly toward an August signing period, the way things are shaping up. Obviously, it's a small sample size, you know, 2 or 3 years of this early signing period. The kids are committing in the spring and in the summer, and there are always going to be flips and changes of heart. And trust me, it's going to happen. But now, you know, going through Texas, you're just watching the film of these guys and watching them practice, and they're already committed. There's very few that I'm asking if they're even considering other schools. They might be taking OVs somewhere. But you have seniors largely committed, I'd say more than 90%. And even the crazy thing is you have a lot of juniors that are already committed or you know, trimming down their list that they want to, you know, have a top 3 or 5 or 6 by the end of their junior year and commit in the spring or latest the summer. So that's just one trend I wanted to share. It's kind of hard to even kind of seek out who's still uncommitted at this point in the year.
Fascinating and really a good peek at the future. Doing our thing with Sam Spiegs. Hey, that's his Twitter handle. Make sure you follow him there. He's all over the Lone Star State. Comes into the Pelican State still a good bit as well. Sam, I want to get you out of here a bit big picture. LSU ended up after Les Miles with Ed Orgeron, and that seems to be working out pretty well for everybody. But the two guys that it looked like they had their sights set on are now at A&M and at UT. And so when you look at this evolving recruiting battle, there are plenty of kids to go around for Orgeron, for Herman, for Fisher. But obviously the top-tier guys, they're going after every single one of the same kids. How do you look at that evolving battle between those three?
Yeah, you know, it's a great point, especially, you know, with all the great features that were written by writers that you and I both know leading up to that Texas LSU game. And, you know, what separates, you know, Texas from Texas A&M or Texas A&M and LSU? And, you know, it kind of comes down, they all have effective offenses, right? Jimbo Fisher has, you know, helped numerous offensive players go in the first round. You know, whether it's Dalvin Cook, a Devontae Freeman, Christian Pond, all these quarterbacks. Texas, you look at Sam Ellinger's in the Heisman race. You know, they have receivers that are on the Saints now. They've the Big 12 offense speaks for itself. LSU has that same high-flying offense. There's a chance to be coached by Coach Ensminger and Joe Brady. Running backs are eating. Receivers are eating. Joe Burrow's in the Heisman conversation. Then you look at defense. LSU, I still say, has a leg up in terms of for defensive players, but Texas runs the same scheme, you know. So Texas and LSU are battling for a kid like Prince Dorba at a Highland Park in Dallas. You know, if you're Prince Dorba and you say, I could drive 2 hours to Austin or, you know, 8 hours to LSU and be the same B linebacker, I mean, what's wrong with staying home? And I think that's the biggest factor. Are you homebodies? Do you have ties to Louisiana? We are on the tail end of it. We are still on the...
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Right back at it. Our apologies to Sam Spiegelman. Cut him off a little toward the end. I promise you, our guy's a worthwhile follow. Make sure you keep up with him at Sam Spiegs. And, hey, keep up with us. We got a lot going on Acadiana Sports Station. Between now and 6 o'clock, more B2BS. We're going to throw some shade very, very soon. I think you'll enjoy today's bout. Urban Meyer's involved, but he's not the butt of the joke. And that is rare for yours truly. It's, like, really difficult not to put him in the crosshairs. He did a pretty classy thing, and we'll share that with you momentarily. And in about 10 minutes, maybe 11, an interview with Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com. Going to go in-depth, not just on LSU, but his alma mater, the Vanderbilt Commodores. And then, of course, from 6 to 8, Five Guys, Stories, and Lies, Raging Cajun Nation. You're going to enjoy today's show. Tommy Badon joining the program. How about your daily reminder? Let's issue that. It's a PSA for everyone locally. Let no one throw shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can sit down and really formulate a vision with the management. It starts up top with Mark. They're going to figure out exactly what it is you're looking for, fit it within the budget, and then give you the best patio game on the block. And it all starts with a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Hey, it's radio. So always, of course, I love it when we can have you hear it, not just me tell you about it. Today is one of those cases. This shade involves Urban Meyer, but it's really pointed at Colin Cowherd. It's also a pretty darn good soundbite, in my opinion, for the former Ohio State, Florida, Utah head coach, Bowling Green head coach. Herbs is grilled a little bit about Joe Burrow. LSU fans, I think, will enjoy this. This is pretty stand-up from Urban Meyer. But toward the end, and you're going to hear it, Colin Cowherd, you might need to do a little homework.
This Joe Burrow kid, it's like LSU's a different program.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. They look better than Clemson's look this year. Tell me about Joe Burrow. Did you know him, your connections to him?
Well, first, LSU, when I was in the SEC, every time we played them, I remember they'd come out of the tunnel and you'd look and say, how are we going to block these guys? That's the best-looking team or one of the best-looking teams. Joe Burrow, we recruited him at Ohio State. He's from Athens, Ohio. His father is a longtime defensive coach, was Frank Solich's defense coordinator forever. Great family, incredible kid, tough as nails. He's developed into a pro prospect, and I've talked to him quite often, and couldn't be more proud of what Joe's done.
How did he get out of Ohio?
Well, he signed. He played for us for 3 years.
And then he moves on?
He did a grad transfer. Dwayne Haskins and Joe had the battle, what was it, 2 years ago in spring, and it was, I mean, it was inches from who was our starting quarterback, and Dwayne won the battle. Joe left as a graduate transfer. And play obviously starting his second year now.
I mean, he's the real deal.
Yeah, he's really what he's done so well.
How did he get out of Ohio? Well, you know, the thing is, he actually came here and was on campus for the better part of 3 years, so he really didn't get out of Ohio. He just didn't win a competition, and well, he transferred out, and now he's doing fantastic, and we feel great for the young man because we recruited him and we love him. Basically, that paraphrases the way Herb's handled that. Kudos to Urban Meyer. I think a lot of coaches in that spot would have very vehemently reminded Colin Cowherd, no, in fact, he didn't get out of the state. That's why he signed with us. Mind-blowing. You just got to do not even a lot of research, just a little research. How did he get out of Ohio? How did you not know about that, bro?
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Clint, I'm used to more or less writing my own material, right? Coming up with the meat and potatoes of my show. At that level, Coward's got all kind of cats that write his content.
Exactly.
Nobody knew about that, huh?
It just slipped past the goalie. But more importantly, like you brought up the fact like how Urban Meyer handled it. I think that was the only way Urban Meyer could handle it now that he's kind of dealing with Fox with them, their, what is they call the big college football Saturday show or whatever?
I'd like to tell you. I don't know. I don't frequent Big 12 or Pac-12 football, so I don't know. That'd be kind of like asking me what happened yesterday or really any day on the Big Ten Network. I don't know.
It's out of sight, out of mind.
You remember the story I told when we started this program, right? It's a good buddy of mine. I got out of college. We were both in Baton Rouge. I was just starting to cut my teeth working with Tiger Rag Magazine. And before I was ready to buy my own house, he and I were renting a house together. And we had one very simple rule. This was at the inception of the Big Ten Network. And, yeah, we had DirecTV, the full sports tier. So, trust me, it was part of our package. My friend Jason and I had one standing rule. Well, probably a few of them, but one that I could say on air. If I walk into the room and you're watching the Big Ten Network, our eyes don't even need to meet. Nary a word needs to be said, but when we wake up the next morning, your stuff needs to be out of the house with you, and vice versa. If you walk into the room and I'm watching the Big Ten Network, just take it on down the road. I will expect your next month's rent in the mail, but we're not going to live together anymore, and we abided by that rule. Jason knows about that. That was, oh boy, a long time ago, but it's still something I hold pretty strong to. I don't have a need for it. You know what I mean? It's like the big Saturday show. I don't know.
You'd just much rather just stick with your game day, right?
I guess. You know, I really don't even watch as much college game day anymore. It can be entertaining at times. But, yeah, I'm kind of a meat and potatoes CBS guy, right, for my SEC football. I'll watch the Mothership, the Deuce, ABC. Yeah, they frequent a lot of Big Ten as well. But they'll have, you know, the game of the day. I just don't watch as much Fox. I don't. I kind of think of that as the late night derelict Pac-12 special, which I'm not immune to.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of Big 12 football during the day, and I'm not really into watching a lot of Texas, Oklahoma State. I just do other things.
Yeah, I can't blame you, especially now apparently the Fox wants to wind up having like 9 a.m. Pac-12 games, which seems like it should be a crime against humanity, honestly.
Yeah, I get it.
Or
right?
11 a.m., I should say.
I was about to say, it's 11 a.m. for us, but out there, they can't enjoy that at all. Hey, one thing that you will enjoy if you win a trip on our dime to Mr. Lester's. We call it it's aptly named, the Mr. Lester's $150 gift certificate giveaway. It's free, easy to enter for your chance to win. Just go to the website, 1037thegame.com, and enter inside of the 1037thegame.com. Clubhouse, Mr. Lesser Steakhouse, located inside Cypress Bayou, and you can win $150. It all starts at the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse on our site. We'll be right back. The next interview, it'll be out of sight. Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com, when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Let's go both sides of the aisle, previewing LSU and Vanderbilt. Excited to be back and excited to bring back our next guest. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Brian Lazar, senior writer, TigerBait.com. Brian, good to talk with you. How are you, man?
Good, Ben. How you doing this afternoon?
Hey, life pretty good here. I'm curious on that side of the basin, just how excited is everybody? The 3-0 start to the season. The offense finally looks just about like everybody always could have wanted, if not better. Defense maybe not exactly up to form, but I guess what's the feeling over there?
Well, I think everybody's enthused. When you look at the first three games, I guess the only negative that you could say was the first half against Northwestern State last week. But outside of that, you know, they played well against Georgia Southern, played really as good as they could play. Played good against Texas, Texas is a good team. He went on the road and beat a good team. And then, like I said, first half was not too good against Northwestern State, but then, you know, they took care of business after that. So, look, this is a different type of LSU team. It's offense first. When you have these teams which are offense first, your defense is not going to be as good, because that's just the mentality of the team. And now look, LSU's, I still say, you know, LSU's linebackers and defensive backs are fine, and all of their problems stem from their defensive front. You know, people are concerned about the passing game and they've given up a lot of yardage. Ben, they don't put any pressure on the quarterback. And I don't know if that problem's going to get solved by your front, because I don't think you have anybody in your front who can push the pocket. So that means you're going to have to blitz. And when you blitz, it may work, or you may give up a big play like Texas did to LSU when they blitzed and Burrow connected with Jefferson for the key 61-yard touchdown. So the biggest problem 3 weeks in is the pass rush from the defensive line. And it doesn't look like that they're going to be able to get anything from that, so that means they're going to have to do things differently. And when they blitz or do things differently, you know, you're susceptible to giving up big plays. You know, look the other night where, I don't know, say 15 times, LSU had one down lineman on the field because they're trying to get guys in there who can rush the passer. So when teams see that, if LSU is going to do that even more, teams are going to start running the football against that package, which will be a problem. But that's the biggest problem. Look, the offense is, you know, everybody's talking about the offense and how much different it is and how good it looks. Ben, the offense is different and good because of Joe Burrow. I mean, that's the key. When you have a very good quarterback, you can do a lot of different things and your offense can look good, and that's the deal with LSU right now. They have a very, very good quarterback.
I'm with you, and it's interesting that you point out defensive line, the push, the pass rush, maybe the biggest question coming into the season. I believe it was the offensive line for most people. I guess your observations on where they are and what a potentially reinstated Ed Ingram could mean to that group.
Well, I think the offensive line, and again, the only game you can really tell a whole lot, it was Texas. I thought they got off to a slow start in that game, but got better. Now, again, this line does not run block as well as most LSU offensive lines, but again, I think that goes back to what's been emphasized. They've emphasized and practiced the pass, so I think they've probably done more things and technique work to be better pass blockers. So that's, you know, so that maybe that's why their run blocking is going to suffer a little bit. It certainly sounds as if Ed Ingram's going to be back pretty shortly. I think the tip-off there is when Ed Ogeron said this week that Chasen Hines is going to start working as the number two center. Well, Chase and Hines could easily, if healthy, could challenge Adrian McGee for that starting spot at left guard. The fact that Ed said, well, Hines is going to be the number two center because we have to have somebody there in case Cushenberry goes down, that just tells me that Ingram's going to be back pretty soon, and then it'll just be a matter of time, and you know, that he gets back into playing shape, and he can then move out McGee at that left guard spot.
Talking LSU football with Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com, a great follow this week and every week on Twitter, at BLDore. The D-O-R-E, of course, stands for Commodore. Give me a little bit of insight into your alma mater, and offensively, we know they're spread-oriented. What type of challenge are they going to present to a bit of a banged-up LSU defense?
Well, their offense is pretty good, except they're breaking in a new quarterback, Riley Neal, who's a grad transfer from Ball State. But, you know, they're Keyshawn Vaughn, running back, very good back. Kalijah Lipscomb, very good wide receiver from down in New Orleans, from Jesuit, he's back. Pinckney, the tight end, one of the best tight ends in the country, he's back. So they have skilled players on offense, but they're breaking in a new quarterback, which anytime you do that, there's going to be problems. And then defensively, they're just average. You know, they gave up, 30 points to Georgia. They gave up 42 to Purdue. Look, I think LSU is going to be able to score at will against Vanderbilt. Now, could Vanderbilt put up some points on LSU? Yes, but I don't think Vanderbilt is good enough defensively, you know, to ever keep LSU in check in this game.
Remind our listeners the capacity of the stadium in Nashville, and I guess, what do you think the split of that game may be percentage-wise, these two fan bases Saturday?
Well, you're talking about, you know, between 40 and 45,000. I saw where LSU Souls bought 6,000 tickets. When most SEC teams go to Nashville, they have half the stands. It's even more when a Georgia or a Florida or obviously a Tennessee goes there. So it will be interesting to see. Look, if LSU people would go, they would easily could get 10 to 15,000. You know, those many tickets would be available for them in the stadium. But I don't know how many, you know, LSU people are going to make the trip to Nashville for an 11 a.m. start on Saturday.
Before we let you go, you had the note on Twitter earlier this afternoon that Parkview Baptist out of Baton Rouge is sending a junior shortstop to pulmonary in the baseball program, Brennan Holt. Give us a little more if you don't mind.
Yeah, just another one of those Baton Rouge shortstops that LSU tries to get all the time. He's committed, so he's got another, you're not talking about someone who's not getting to LSU till the 2022 season. So we've got a long ways to wait before he goes. LSU certainly needs to stock up on infielders, and they just worry about stocking up on good players right now. And I'm not surprised by this. Guess who is being honored at Nashville this weekend when LSU's in town?
You tell me.
The Vanderbilt's national championship baseball team.
There you go.
From last year. So I mean that. I'm sure. I thought that all along. Even before I saw it, I said, "Well, that made sense." I'm figuring that if they're going to bring their baseball team back for a football game, they're probably going to bring them back when they play in LSU, and that's exactly what they're doing this weekend.
A little salt in the wounds, I guess, on the baseball side for a football matchup. Life in the SEC. Brian, great to catch up with you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Okay. Good talking to you, Ben. Anytime. Thank you.
Same on this side. Enjoy catching up with Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com. Knows LSU, knows Vandy, and I've seen some pretty hilarious social media messages this week as well. Some reminders from a couple of Vandy blogger sites that LSU fans, every dime that you inject into that Vanderbilt community this weekend, not the Nashville community, but the Vanderbilt community, when you step on campus, you're in the stadium, all you're doing is funding the Vandy baseball program for Tim Corbin to get more star players and fill out his scholarship roster. So go to Nashville, but maybe spend your money before you go on campus. LSU football doesn't need to support Vandy baseball. SEC, truly hilarious. And yes, Clint, it just means more. We'll hit our final break of the program, and then we'll be right back at it. At 6 o'clock, we flip it over to Five Guys Stories and Lies. That means a great afternoon turns into a great evening on 103.7 The Game.
Take Cash Out is with our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.125%. APR, 4.22%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN to learn how taking cash out with a 30-year fixed mortgage might be the right solution for you. And for a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rates subject to change. Pay 0.88% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Jim Rome here with your Rome Report.
It's only Wednesday, but it's been a heck of a week already for Jalen Ramsey and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Starting Sunday when Ramsey and head coach Doug Marone got into it on the sideline. Then a day later, reports surfaced Ramsey wanted out of Jacksonville and he asked for a trade. And then yesterday, he met with the media. Although he did not explain why he wanted that trade, he certainly did not deny it, but said as long as he's in Jacksonville, he will still be a great teammate and he will be focused. I can understand why that guy would want out. He wants to win, and he wants to get paid, and neither one of those things are happening. So this might come down to a very simple choice. Doug Marone or Jalen Ramsey? Who's more valuable, Ramsey or Marone? The Pro Bowl corner or the sub-500 coach? I'm not looking to get somebody fired. I'm never looking to take food off somebody's plate. But if the decision is Ramsey or Marone, the answer better be Ramsey.
Protect your engine with 5 quarts of Castrol Edge full synthetic motor oil and a Wix filter for just $33.99. Plus, get a $15 gift card after mail-in rebate. You can also earn bonus O-Rewards points on Castrol Edge motor oil products right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Limit supplies. See store for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
An interesting creature inhabits the flat, arid plains of many an automobile dashboard. The bobblehead. It's most agreeable and will nod along to anything, despite having no brain function. But when the bobblehead hears how GEICO not only saves people money, but also gives them access to licensed agents 24/7 online and over the phone, he'll nod even more vigorously because he knows you should switch. Because yes, switching to GEICO is a no-brainer. Easy, bobblehead, easy. You're going to get whiplash.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
As you listen throughout Acadiana, saddle up. The Angola Prison Rodeo is coming, and at 103.7 The Game, we want to give you a family four-pack of tickets to the wildest show in the South. Just text the word Angola, A-N-G-O-L-A, Angola, to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to this year's Angola Prison Rodeo. With that, welcome back in. One final time, a little more B2BS to cap off your hump day. Before we send you to Five Guys Stories and Lies, Clint, I have been promising, and now it's time to deliver. We've gotten a lot of response to our sink or swim question of the day. We've gotten a little bit over the air, almost nothing on Twitter. What's wrong with our tweeps? But on Facebook, everyone is active. Good reminder that Acadiana, this here is Facebook country. We asked you to rank your top three LSU quarterbacks since 2000. I'm telling you, Clint, this has been like asking somebody about their favorite pair of jeans. I think it depends on the day, the style, the look, the weather. A lot of varying responses. Chris W., Rohan Davey, Jamarcus Russell, Matt Flynn. Robbie D, Flynn, Russell, Mettenberg. But I like what he says at the end, Robbie. If Burrow continues, he'll be an obvious number one at the end of the year. That chance certainly exists. Scott R, Mettenberger, Russell, Flynn. Ask me again after the season. Burrow could rise into top two. And by the way, Clint, I'm going to share this part with you. The last part of Scott's response also didn't Google if Rohan Davey was after 2000, which he was, then it's Davey Mettenberger Russell. You were just hitting the snooze button on LSU way back in the day. Back in your, like, I don't know, dude, early to mid-teens.
Yeah.
Rohan Davey was a force.
That's what I've heard. Again, I guess it's the fact, like, I think it's also shows kind of how the gap is between you and I, because, again, you grew up in Baton Rouge. You grew up around that program. And my parents, my dad especially, more of a Cajun household, if you will.
No, that's fair. It definitely is fair. And, you know, it's not.
I think
like
that definitely.
The guy also wasn't playing when there was black and white film, right? It wasn't that long ago. So
exactly.
Rohan Davey, pretty darn solid. Damon G, I think this must be a joke. Ryan Perilou, Jordan Jefferson, Brandon Harris. Just going to hit the fast forward button. Brant M, Mock, Flynn, and Mettenberger. But Burrow is on his way. So Brant likes the national championship quarterbacks, as does Brian B. He's going Davey, Mock, Flynn. I'm just going to be honest, a list that doesn't include Jamarcus Russell and probably doesn't have him in your top two is not a list that I can really get behind. That's just me. Marcello J., Russell, Davey, and Flynn. And he said, I'm going to throw out a name that not a lot of people give love, and that's Ryan Perilou. If he didn't ball out against Tennessee, we don't go to the national championship. It's a fair point. Finally, Mike T., via Facebook, he ranked them. Mettenberger 1, Davey 2, Jarrett Lee 3. Without him, Mike says, they don't go undefeated in 2011 and possibly win the championship if he played. I don't believe Jarrett Lee helps LSU to beat Alabama on January 9, 2012. I think that trying that couldn't have hurt. For that matter, trying Zett Mettenberger couldn't have hurt in that game inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. But what do you think, Clint? I mean, I told you that there were some wildly different answers. Is that validated with what I just shared?
Oh, it's definitely validated, especially the one that you kind of fast-forwarded past. I think that's a sink or swim part due as we end this show. It was that one of the rules of football clones?
I don't know what you're talking about. No, seriously, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, is that like some subreddit stuff? What are you saying?
These trolls that are constantly calling into the ARCO equipment hotline, and if they're calling now, I'm not answering it.
Oh, you think that's what's happening?
I think that might have been one of the rules of football guys somewhere in there, or the minions.
Oh, now I see. The Brandon Harris, Ryan Perilou, Jordan Jefferson response?
Yes.
Okay. You were flying so far over my head. Like Icarus, right? So you hit the sun, you burn up. I just didn't know what we were talking about. Now I'm with you. Okay. Now, we might have got a trolling response on Facebook,
exactly,
which would be the first time in the history of social media that somebody said something just to get jollies out of everybody else. You want to get in? We'll fit you in before the show is over. 706-0111. And for what it's worth, Clint's top three. Let's see if I can find this, brother. You gave Joe Burrow 1.
Yeah.
Zach Mettenberger 2. Jamarcus Russell 3. Burrow at 1 already is mighty presumptuous. And I'm not just saying that to you, because we had another caller, Brandon, who put Burrow 1 as well. But we had John that called in and said, I'm not doing the Denny Green. I'm not going to crowd his ass. He's played a season and 3 games. A decent but not great season. I know it ended with the flurry in the bowl game. A decent but not great season and 3 games. So that would almost be like saying that Cecil Collins is the best running back LSU's ever had.
Yeah.
Sample size me, right? But Burrow's got a chance to climb that ladder and quickly. For what it's worth, my list, I went Jamarcus Russell 1, Rohan Davey 2, and I will take Joe Burrow edging out Zach Mettenberger for my number 3 right now. But it's been intriguing to watch the way that this one kind of twists in the wind so far today. Almost at the end of our program, but nowhere near at the end of our rope this week. Tomorrow, I'll be out live at the Tap Room River Ranch beginning at 4. Blaine Viator going to sit in at 6. We'll see if we can get our man Gordy Rush at 5. I know he's going to be in transit going to Nashville. So we'll see if G Rush is available. If not, we'll plug in somebody very good in that spot. Maybe not quite Gordy Rush level, but certainly somebody else who didn't go to Jesuit. So that's an upgrade. It should be a great show tomorrow at the Tap Room River Ranch on Friday. Got the thumbs up earlier this week. Clint, I'm going to test your memory here. On Friday, we will do the second ever show of Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Sam Houston High School in Lake Chuck. Do you remember what happened the last time and who was with me? the last time that B2BS tried to emanate from that press box.
Sam Houston, it's struggling me right now. I don't know why. It's weird.
This would have been September of 2016.
Okay.
You want to go back in the Wayback Machine with me for a second?
All right.
Myself and Chet Yoder.
Oh, wow.
Were there to call a Karen Crow High Sam Houston football game. And I would say
that's where the gap was.
20 to 30 minutes into the 2.5 hour show, the internet said no mas.
Yeah, it tapped out.
I did the show on my cell phone with you. No guest, no callers. Football night in Acadiana again by phone. So we're gonna knock on wood. All right, we're gonna do a little rain dance, but not for rain, but for the internet making it rain over in Lake Chuck. I'm excited to get back out there. It's a heck of a facility they got. Give a brother some internet. Five Guys Stories and Lies coming up next. For Clint, I'm Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.